Jackson, our speaker for this morning. Je suis indépendant. Je suis un addict. Tenemos Texicanos. Hail Macedonian. No matter how you put it, my name's Bill and I'm an addict. Anybody that's here for the first convention, will you please stand up and stay standing? Somebody close by, give him a hug. Somebody close by, give him a hug. Give him a hug. And we're glad you're here. We need you in our lives. I usually share for about 3.5 minutes on what it was like and about 50 minutes on what it's like now. Talk about recovery. I first started using in a whorehouse in Panama Canal in 1965, drugs other than liquid. I got stoned, I got laid, and I caught the clap, and I went downhill for the next 18 years. I presently live in Gainesville, Florida. Before I moved there 9 years ago, I lived in Columbus, Georgia, and I was an auto parts specialist, which is a long name for a thief. I'd buy old auto parts that you could sell to rebuilders all over the Southeast in a one-ton truck. And I'd sell them to rebuilders in Atlanta. One particular night in particular, I was driving back on a round trip from Columbus, Georgia to Savannah. It's about 280 miles. And in the bottom of the truck, there's an empty can, a case of Budweiser's or whatever I was drinking that day, empty baggies, and I think I'd thrown the syringes out the window, whatever it took just to get normal that day, you know, what you had to get by just to be normal. And Willie Starr, and I was in the truck by myself, listening to the radio, having a grand time, and Willie Starr hit a home run for the Pittsburgh Pirates and won the World Series. And I'm clapping, raising the hell up in the front of the truck, steering with my knees, just having a ball. And I'm about 4 or 5 blocks from the house, and I tap a guy in the ass with my truck in his brand new car. And there was no big problem, but he called the cops. And this cop showed up. And I used to practice all these things about standing on one leg with my, and then doing all this and picking up a nickel and walking down the white line. And I was pretty good at it loaded, as I'm sure most of you were, too. This cop had me do something after it blew up the balloon. I didn't register at point one. I liked it. I mess with sign people every time I get up here, too. He had me do something no cop had ever done. I blew up the balloon and I didn't register point one. So he had me say my ABCs. I went A, B, C, D, E, F, G, all the way through, tell me what you think of me. He said, well, you've had a few and I can't get you for public drunk, so we'll get you for driving under the influence. So he wrote me up a ticket. 2 weeks later, almost to the day, my father had given me a round trip ticket on this chartered bus with military personnel from Columbus, Georgia to Atlanta, Georgia to see the Falcons play football. I got hair down the crack of my ass from 9 years of growth from Vietnam and a beard down to here, and I'd taken my Quaaludes and my Valiums with me in case I got nervous. And there's 40 people on this bus. They're retired generals and colonels and majors in the Army. And my wife and I get on there, and they got two 20-gallon igloo coolers, like construction water coolers, slapped full of Bloody Marys. That's 40 gallons of liquor on the trip up. I don't remember who the Falcons were playing, if they won or lost. I didn't give a shit. You know, on the way back, my wife and I argued the whole time about who was going to drive. You're too drunk. You're too shit-faced. You can't see. Now, we had to get back to the parking lot at 2 o'clock in the morning and wait till all the cars were gone before we could figure out which one was ours. I won the argument, and I'm driving home. It's 6 blocks to the house. On the 3rd block, I take a right-hand turn, and I pass out. and I smash into a guy just minding his own business at a stop sign, head up. My wife's got enough sense to jump out of the car and walk home three blocks. I got my six-year-old daughter's Mickey Mouse blue plastic wallet in my pocket. It's got my driver's license in it. It's got a sheriff's badge from Arizona I picked up in some scrapyard, God knows where. And the same cop comes. And I look up at him. I finally recognize who it is. And before he says anything, I go, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. All the way through, I say, tell me what you think of me. He opens up the door, and I fall out on the street. He says, I think you're going to jail. All my life, I kept using. I ended up in front of judges and lawyers and doctors, and they all told me I was crazy, and I would just concur, yeah. And they'd give me more medication or a fine or this and that. I got popped 11 different times. The longest I ever spent in jail was 7 days. I'm going to start in on recovery. And before I start in on recovery, I'd like to have Suzanne from Rhode Island come up and read a paragraph that's real important in my life. Get the book. This is her first convention, and the newcomer is the most important person.
I'm Suzanne, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Suzanne.
When at the end of the road, we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative. Either go on as best we can to the bitter end, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple, spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Thank you, dear. You did wonderful. Based on a life of desperation, I found some honesty in the first step. When I went to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting, I weighed 158 pounds. I had a pair of crutches, one tennis shoe, and a bicycle, and that's all I owned in the world. You people hugged me, and you told me you loved me, and it freaked me out. I figured you wanted my crutches and my bicycle. 3 weeks later, somebody stole my bicycle. And I said, I knew what them son of a bitches meant. When I share, I like to share about the principles and what they mean to me. And before I get into this, I'd like to thank the committee for letting me be a part of. You know, there's two people here from Florida. You know, that's wonderful. You know, I don't know what the hell he's doing up here. As I travel all over the United States and come into meetings, I say, my name's Bill, I'm an addict, I feel right at home, and my world's getting smaller, and my family's getting larger, and you're my brothers and my sisters. What a gift, what a miracle. So based on a life of desperation, I found some honesty in the first step, admitting I didn't know how to live without using. And I'm going to give you little examples of what the principles mean to me, and to share some examples in my life. And what I share is just my opinion. It may not be any. It's just my experience, strength, and hope. And I hope you don't hear any advice up here. Because if you're like me, you don't take advice any damn how. You're hard-headed. You got to experience it yourself. Honesty. At 90 days clean, I wasn't sharing from the heart at all. I was still sharing from the gut. I'd share mostly at meetings, my name's Bill, and I'm confused. Now, back then, I probably had a moniker of 5 different things. I was a recovering drunk, a terminally, I was a drunk, I was an addict, I loved chocolate, I loved women, and I gambled. And I had about 5 different things. Then you simplified it, told me, say, hey man, you're just an addict. I said, okay. I got a book here I'm going to read just one little section of, something I wrote, and this is, Because I'm Human. You know, I know today being a human being is a spiritual experience, thanks to you people. It's not a natural phenomenon for an addict. And when I wrote it, I read this guy's book, and I wrote my own upside down. Nash are doing things different. And his is a little picture in here of a boy climbing a mountain. It says, I can climb a mountain. This is my writing here. I can go to a fellowship that helps me with my overeating, my dependence on alcohol, my abuse of cocaine, belatids, barbiturates, marijuana, my misuse of people, my isolated childhood, my alcoholic father, my domineering mother, my inability to let you love me, my inadequacies, my mistrust, my problems as a father, and it's all under one roof called Narcotics Anonymous. The solutions to all the problems in my life are found here. You know. At 90 days clean, they gave me a red chip, said it was a danger chip. Back then, you got a white one when you came in, and 90 days later, you got a red one. Well, I wasn't sharing from the heart, and I went home that night, and I was kneeling down with a set of rosary beads in one hand, a sawed-off shotgun in my head in the other hand. I still felt like shooting dope, and I wouldn't tell them people at meetings. I knew if I was going to use, I was going to die, so why pay somebody to kill me? You know, I'm going to do it myself. And a phone rings, and I got to lay the shotgun down to pick up the phone, and the woman says, and Mr. Bill, how you doing? She's in the program. I said, oh, I'm fine. Everything's wonderful. I had no idea what honesty was about. I got something in Narcotics Anonymous called a sponsor. I'd like to share a little story before I get into that. A woman brings a little fat son to the guru and says, Guru, tell my son to quit eating sugar. It's killing him. And the guru looks at her little fat son and says, come back in 2 weeks. The woman just walks away with the son. They come back in 2 weeks. The woman says, Guru, tell my son to quit eating sugar. It's killing him. And the guru says, quit eating sugar, son. It's killing you. And the boy walks away and he quits eating sugar. And the mother says, I brought him here 2 weeks ago. Why didn't you tell him 2 weeks ago? And the guru looked at the woman and said, first, I had to quit eating sugar. I can't tell you as a sponsor to do something I'm not doing, no. I have a sponsor in Narcotics Anonymous. He has a sponsor in Narcotics Anonymous. He has a sponsor in Narcotics Anonymous. He has a sponsor, you know. You people got what I want, you know. At five years ago, when I had about 2 years clean, we finally got 7 meetings a week in Gainesville, Florida, and I didn't have to go anywhere else. You know, I shared at a regional service meeting. The guy next to me wouldn't even let me cry. You know, he wouldn't even let me cry. Facing a life of desperation, I found some honesty in the first step, admitting I didn't know how to live. I found some hope in the second step, and he told me I might be restored to sanity. In the first step, he told me I was powerless over something, a disease called addiction that wasn't a substance. It's all-encompassing. In the second step, I found some hope and a power greater than myself. A power greater than myself was a recovery text, was a meeting. One night, obviously, it was a phone call. You know, it was IP. It's a pamphlet. There's something you shared in a meeting that saved my ass, you know. It had nothing to do with God, thank God. Sanity. 3 addicts go moose hunting. They're on a pontoon plane. The pilot lets them down up in northern New York. He says, I'll be back in a week. We got room for 1 moose, you understand? They say, oh yeah, we understand. So the pilot comes back in a week and he lets down on the lake. He looks up on the shore and there's 3 addicts and there's 3 dead moose. The pilot just shakes his head and he goes on in the shore. And the addicts come running down and say, we talked about it, and we're going to give you $600 to take back all 3 moose. And the pilot says, it ain't a question of money. So wait, you know, the addicts get back together and it's in their GSR down. So we're going to give you $900 to carry back all 3 moose. And the pilot says, man, it ain't a question of money, it's a question of weight. You know, we got to get over these trees off this lake. And the pilot sees he's pissing in the wind, so he says, okay, I'll try it for $1,000. So they strap on one pontoon, they strap on a dead carcass of one of the moose, on another pontoon, they strap on the other moose, and stick a carcass in the back seat with 2 addicts, and there's one in the front seat. And he's boogieing this plane, and he gets up off the lake, and he banks it, and he, oh, it looks like they're going to make it. He's about to get over the last big pine tree out here, and the moose antlers catches in one of the pine trees, and they crash. Well, there's addicts laying all over the ground and carcasses everywhere, and they got broken bones. And Eddie calls over to Jack, and Jack's coming out of a daze. He says, "Where are we? Where are we?" Eddie looks around and says, "Well, as near as I can tell, about 150 yards further we made it last year." You know. It'll be different this time. Insanity. Beautiful example of that is in the recovery text, repeating the same mistakes over and over again, expecting different results. Hope. Most of y'all know what I do for a living. I also make a type of jewelry. It's Christian jewelry, and I sell it all over the United States, and I go to these charismatic conferences once in a while. One conference I tried to get into 4 years ago was up in Providence, Rhode Island. And they turned me down. A woman over the phone turned me down and said, "We only allow artists from the New England region." I said, "Well, I happen to know that the person that used to own this company is not from New England. It's from Gainesville, Florida, and he used to come up here." She said, "Well, I've got the authority to invite outside artists to our conference." I said, "Well, what do I have to do?" She said, "Let me ask you a few questions." I said, "Okay, shoot." She said, "What's your relationship with the Lord?" And I scratched my head and said, "Oh, shit." I said, "I'm going to shoot the moon." I'm a recovering addict, and in my program of recovery, thanks to thousands of other recovering addicts just like me, I haven't had to pick up today. My higher power is whom I choose to call God. And she said, "Whoa, stop. That's enough." I said, "Okay, here comes the rejection. I can handle it." She said, "If you can be that honest with us, we'd love to have you come up here." And they let me come up to Providence, Rhode Island, this big charismatic conference. They gave me the keys to their house, the keys to their car. You know, this nice little bungalow out in the woods like we used to break in. You know, you lift up the window and you go in, you unplug the dog, and then you steal everything. Then you plug the dog back in, you go out, you know, that kind of place. And when I work these shows, I like to wear NA t-shirts. And the people up there hugged me and showed me unconditional love. Because I'd shut down every evening about 7 o'clock and I'd go find the NA meeting. And back then, you had to travel a little bit to find an NA meeting. Another show I worked was at the University of Notre Dame. And on Sunday morning, I was wearing my favorite t-shirt. It's a Hug a Miracle t-shirt from the Washington, D.C. World Convention. And the little nuns come up to me on Sunday morning and they said, "Prayers of saints, are you a miracle, my son?" I said, "Yes, sister, I'm a miracle." And they hugged me. They said, "What's so miraculous about you?" And I said, "Sister, I used to shoot dope on a daily basis for 18 years. I'm long going to have to do it." And she backed up, trying to clean her arms off, getting away from me. Based on a life of desperation, the honesty in the first step, the hope in the second step, I found some faith in the third step. I'm also a recovering Catholic. I used to have nightmares of penguins chasing me down the street with the rulers and yardsticks trying to beat the hell out of me, telling me they love me, you know. In the third step, it says we found a higher power of our own understanding. That's what's neat. The responsibility is back on me. Everybody's always wondering, what's God's will? What's God's will? God's will for me is to grow up, you know, to be responsible. It's real simple. It says we made a decision. I want to talk about God first before I get into decision. Little girl, it's coloring. It sounds so much like my daughter Bridget. I always want to say it. She told me a story, but that'd be a lie. There's a little girl, 4 years old, coloring in the kitchen. And her dad comes in making a cup of coffee. He says, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" She says, "I'm coloring." So he goes on making the coffee. He says, What are you coloring?" She says, "I'm drawing a picture of God." And he goes on and turns around and looks at her. He says, "Nobody knows what God looks like." She just smiles and says, "They will when I get done." It's a God of our own understanding. I've got permission to share this story with a guy I sponsor in Memphis, Tennessee, who happens to be gay. He and I had done a fifth step together in Nashville about 2 months ago, and after 5 hours of intensive sharing, we were laying on the floor of this hotel, and I looked at him and said, "You don't have a God in your life that loves you." And he started crying. He said, "Yeah, I know." I said, "Well, we need to change your concept of God, you know." He said, "It's not me. It's not your mother. It's not your father. What are you comfortable with?" And we both thought for a while, and we came up with we're going to put God in a dress, throw some pearls around her neck,
from the high heels. And he said, when I pray, I'm not going to say our Father who art in heaven or our Mother who art in heaven. He's going to say, girlfriend. You know, I will defend his right to have that girlfriend as his higher power till I die. You know, it's up to him. He called me a week later and said, it's working. It's working. Girlfriend's listening. Beautiful. Beautiful. There was a woman that came through our area, and we asked her to close the meeting back then when we used to use the Lord's Prayer 4 or 5 years ago. And she said, our Mother who art in heaven. And that made sense. You know, my father beat the hell out of me all my life. You know, a warm, loving, caring God might be our Mother, you know. Today I know my God doesn't have a sex. It doesn't make any difference. I don't understand God. How can I as a human being understand a deity like that? I can see it in your eyes and in your hearts when I come to meet. I can see hope in your eyes and in your hearts. You know, is the guy here that had one day clean last night? Is he here? Okay. I was going to let him tell me how he stayed clean today. I'm a newcomer. No matter how much clean time I got, I'm a newcomer. I got to remember that. Made a decision in the third step. One of the toughest decisions I had to make. I had about 3 years clean. All my kids lived with their mother in Georgia, and I hadn't bothered to get a divorce. And by then, 13-year-old daughter called up and told me that Dad, Mom's been beating me with an extension cord, and I got marks all over my leg, and I can't go to school. And there was nothing I could do to save that child over that phone. All I could do was cry and walk down the street and share it with another addict. And I came back, and it forced me to get a divorce and try to seek custody of my children. And unlike most of you guys, I got a rap sheet like this, and in the state of Georgia, I lost the case. But at Christmas time that same year, all my children came to live with me for 10 days. And I took the two little ones to meetings every night. And I wish I could pick up this program as quick as kids do. You know, it's neat to have children here amongst us now. When we were using, they always had to stay out in the car or in the alley, you know, or back home. You know. Now they're right, they're just, you know, we're big kids, and they're little kids, you know. And we spent 10 days together at Christmas, and I took the two, my daughter Bridget and my son Jeff, to meetings every night. And I was on one of these fad diets, which I'm still on now. Where you don't eat any red meat, you don't eat any sugar, and I was going to have, in 30 days, I was going to lose 25 pounds and have any woman in the world just laying at my feet, whichever one I want, you know. Pick a color, any color, you know. Ain't happened yet. But I'd go home after meetings at night, and I'd look at that icebox, and my daughter Bridget would say, remember, Dad, just for today, and I'd want to strangle her. We kneel down at night and we say our prayers together. And my son blew me out of the water the first night. After we finished saying Our Father, he patted me on the back and said, keep coming back. It works if you work it. They teach me a lot. You know, I am teachable today. After spending 10 days with me, I had to take these children back to their mother. And my 14-year-old daughter, Katie, decided to stay with me. When you're 14 in Georgia, you can pick which parents you want to live with. I had to see these two little girls say goodbye to each other. And it cracked me up. You know, I didn't know if I was doing God's will or my will. And I gave her an out. You know, the ex-wife's calling the cops, and I'm used to all that. Now, I'm crying. My daughters are crying. My son's crying. And I said, Katie, if you want to stay here, it's okay. I understand. She said, no, Dad, I want to come home with you. I want to try it your way. And we drove home 277 miles. And back then, I used to dress as a biker because I looked as a biker. And I hadn't been on a bike since 1971 doing acid, you know. But I wore a red bandana and overalls, and on the way home, I'm drying my tears with this red bandana. And my daughter Katie snatches the bandana out of my hand, starts drying her eyes, and we made a pact that one day we'll all be back together. A couple years ago, they had me sharing a North Carolina convention. I got to this point in my story, and I realized that all my children were with me at that convention. We were back together. You know, things happen in God's time, not in my time, thank God. You know. But based on a life of desperation. The honesty in the first step, the hope in the second step, the faith in the third step. Found some self-discipline in the fourth step when I had to write my fears and search in moral inventory. I finally got a sponsor at about, 2 weeks clean. And he had me sit down and write the steps. It's a miracle. I don't know how sponsors are putting our lives, but they just happen to be there at the right time. Just right on time. And he had me write the steps. He had me read the basic text, take notes on what I read. And I was so screwed up, he made me take notes on my notes. A friend of mine shares we had the attention span of a gnat's ass when we get here, and that was me. You'd bring up a topic at a meeting, and I'd try to think of something real important to say. Just blow you out of this chair, Back then we had a real big fellowship of 7 people in Gainesville, Florida, and I was going to impress you people. My arms were black and blue, and I stunk when I first got to NA. You hugged me and you told me you loved me, and it freaked me out. Women hadn't hugged me for a long time, and I liked it when both women hugged me, Then the men hugged me. I didn't know if they were lighting their loafers or what, But you told me to keep coming back. At the second or third meeting, somebody remembered my name and said, "Hey, Mr. Bill." And I just turned around, I figured he had a subpoena or a warrant, I was getting my ass busted again. But he remembered my name. Self-discipline. My sponsor made me go to meetings and make a game at meetings. He said, "You can't share for the last 5 minutes. You don't know a damn thing about recovery. You just keep your damn mouth shut." I said, "Well, what do you want me to do?" He said, "Take mental notes of what people are sharing, how to save your life." I said, "Well, can I bring a pad and a paper?" He said, "No, these guys are already afraid of you. Don't bring a pad and paper. They're going to think you're writing down their life story. I'm going to bust them." So the first night, he gives me a pop quiz after I'm doing this. He says, "What are you here tonight?" I said, "Well, the little Jewish guy from Miami shared," and he said, 74 times in 3.5 minutes. You know. He said, "What did he say about recovery?" I said, "Hell, I don't know. I was counting all of your notes." He said, "Keep coming back. It might even work for you. Who knows?" My sponsor had 11 months clean back then. Nobody had 11 months clean back then. That was the guru, man. He was the one. He had a job and a girlfriend. He had everything I wanted. And he had patience. Boy, he put up with some shit. I'd come to him with my little old, he used to say, "You pole vault over mouse turds, man. You make a big issue out of everything." I'd come to him with my little old trivial problems, everyday living, how to get by, and he'd say, "So, what are you going to do about it?" I said, "Well, tell me what to do." He said, "No, that's the old con game. You want me to make your decision? When you screw up, you're going to say, 'See, I told you.' You make up your own mind. Time to grow up, kid." Jesus. And the fourth step, he made me write about my resentments. He made me write about my fears. He made me write about the harm I'd done to others. He made me write about my relationships, sexual and otherwise. In the first year I got here, they told me no relationships for a year. Hell, I was too proud to ask people what that meant. I quit masturbating for 6 months. That was the biggest relationship I had when I got here. Finally, I got in the hard way one night. I asked my sponsor. I said, "Is this what this means, Martin?" He says, "No, you sick pup. Keep coming back." I said, "Well, can you give me a hand?" He said, "You are sick." Now, when I got here, I didn't pray, I didn't cry, and I didn't ask for help. And something that broke that, gave me that gift of tears, was a movie. One of the best movies I've ever seen in my life was The Color Purple. And in that movie, I see these two little girls being torn apart as children. I see abandonment. I see rejection. I see all those core issues of addiction. And I'm crying. I took my girlfriend at the time. I think she and I had been together about 3 years. I took her to see this movie, and I'm crying like a natural born child 5 times during this movie. Not these little boo-hoo tears, but I'm talking... And she kind of moves over and gets the hell out of the way. Who is this fool? I know today real men do cry. They wear pink and they eat peach. I'm also a Vietnam veteran. I was there in 68, 69, and 70. You know. Took this guy, I was on a relapse. He'd come back in that 30 days clean. He'd gotten almost a year and a half. And took him to see this movie, Platoon. I'd never seen none of those Vietnam movies. I stayed away from him. I said, ah, this would be no big deal. Come on, see this movie with me. So we go see this movie, and this guy was 30 days clean. This just shows me how my God speaks to you, to me through you people. And we go see this movie, and there's this one particular scene in this movie where this guy's been shot in the chest by his own men. He's been shot in the back by the enemy. And he's in this field on his knees, and he's got his arms up in the air, and the chopper's pulling out, and they're leaving him. And you know the sucker's going to die. And in that one scene, I flash upon the same issues, you know, rejection, abandonment. All of Vietnam flashed in front of me, and I'm bawling my eyes out. And this newcomer of 30 Days Clean holding my hand. And when I left that movie theater, it was the same as when I came back from Vietnam. One day I'm in the war, the next day I'm in Seattle, Washington, saying, what in the hell were those 3 years all about? And I didn't have a clue. And this guy's holding my hand, and he had enough sense to take me across the street to a coffee shop and talk to me for an hour and a half, and he saved my natural ass. Ain't no doubt in my mind. And he hugged me and said, welcome home. The war's over. Same thing you people did. One time I was having a lot of problems with faith, trying to figure out God and define God and figure out a cubbyhole where God lived and what his credit card rate and what kind of car he drove and everything. This guy's sponsor was 6 days clean. Says, you know, my higher power never refuses to grant me an interview. I said, well, say that again. Let me write that down. My higher power, you know, out of the mouths of babes. Now, when I wrote about my resentments, you know, resentment's always caused anger and hatred. I know today hatred's too powerful an emotion to waste on somebody I don't even like. I had to write about the harm they'd done to me, how it affected me, what role I played in it. At first, I didn't want to do it. My sponsor made me sit down with a legal pad, the infamous legal pad. You know, we're all lawyers. A pen, and he made me say a prayer and do it for 15 minutes a day. Because he knew I'd get obsessed and compulsive about it in 15 minutes. I ended up writing on resentments, and I didn't think I had very many. I wrote 47 pages about resentments. I remembered 41 names alone from Vietnam. Slow down, no running the pool. And he told me what to do with these resentments after we got done. I had to pray for these people to have everything I wanted. I had to confront these other people. I wrote about my fears, and one of the biggest fears I had when I got clean was my children wouldn't love me anymore. You know, at 2 years clean, I was coming home from work one day and saw a little red dog, looked like a Wolverine, in this fenced-in yard. He'd been there for 4 days. The people dragged up for a long weekend. They just left him there. No water, no food. I did the same thing you would have done. I picked up that dog 2 houses from my house and took it home. Butch has got 5 years clean now. Those people never came looking for that dog 2 houses away. I went to a meeting that night, and I shared that I stole this dog, and my home group understood that I loved myself enough where I could love something else, finally. And they said, welcome home. It took a while for me to learn how to love. Today, no matter where you've been, no matter what you've done, you deserve all good things in your life. And you'll find them here in this fellowship, beyond your wildest dreams. You know, miracles, I like it when you do miracles like this, right? How you do miracles? Miracles, yeah.
Wonderful happenings.
Wonderful happenings. I love it. That's a miracle. Yeah. Can you do this?
No.
Oh, okay. I wasn't paying attention either. What did you do when I said masturbation? Oh. And if you're left hand.
You're a liar.
We won't be on the world tape. No problem. I get over myself. I wrote about my fears, my resentments, the harm I'd done to others. And then I shared it in a fist step. And fist step to me takes courage. I shared it with my sponsor, and he's sitting on the couch for 4.5 hours listening to me share. He's kind of hewing and hawing at the end. I said, "Damn, Martin, have I done something wrong? You know, I've told you about people I killed, houses I burned down, and all the atrocities I've done to myself and my family, my in-laws, my outlaws, everywhere I've been. It's been like a hurricane behind me." He said, "No, you're about normal." I said, "Normal?" He said, "Yeah, you're an addict, aren't you?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, you're about normal for an addict." And he shared some of his fifth step with me. I said, "Man, you're sick." He said, "Yeah, so are you, and that's why we're here." I found some trust in the fifth step besides that courage. I let somebody know who I was, and he didn't laugh at me. He hugged me, and he told me he loved me. You guys have never laughed at me. You've laughed with me, you know. I can get up here and tell my story, and I'm telling your story. It's the same basic thing. We go from desperation to love, you know. We go from feeling like we're nothing to realize we're human beings, you know. We got some self-esteem in this fellowship. And sitting out here, we are so talented. We got plumbers, we got lawyers, we got doctors, we got nurses, we got teachers. We ain't in jail no more, man. What a miracle. We aren't in institutions. You know? They labeled us schizophrenic crazy, so we'd never be able to tie our shoes. You know? For a long time, I believed them. But thanks to this fellowship, all things are possible. There's no limit to the amount of love in here. You can just feel it. And when you say miracle, I used to do a children's meditation where you put your hands up like this and you stare into the other person's eyes and you touch fingers. You don't say anything. You just breathe in good thoughts about the other person. And they're your friends from then on. We're living, breathing miracles. What did we hear the first night? I am. You don't remember what it was either. Inactive, something about miracle. I don't know. I wrote down in it, I am that. Inspirationally activated miracle. I am. Yeah, I love it. And the courage in the fifth step. Based on a life of desperation, the honesty, the hope, the faith, the discipline, and the courage. I found some willingness in the sixth step. I wrote down all my defects of character, and on the opposite side of that, I wrote down the assets. You know, as addicts, we're prone to focus on the negative. We don't like to focus. You know, it's familiar. It's like Michael Jackson's glove. It's real mushy and pliable, and it feels and looks like shit. You know? But out of that shit comes flowers, you know, fertilizer. We got to focus on positive things. I like to do positive affirmations in my life today, and they work. They blow me away. They really do. I was having a lot of problems with relationships at one time. Hell, all the time. And I started to have doing this, saying every day, "I build, deserve loving relationships." I'd say that 40 times a day. Women started calling me up from all over the United States. I quit doing it. It freaked me out. So I said, "Hey, put the thing away, man. It's working too good." You know. Biggest defect of character I have since I've been clean is lust. You know. Once you women clean up, you're some of the foxiest ladies in the world. I swear to God. You definitely got everything I want. And when you men clean up, you're no longer competition for me. You're my brothers. You know. I went to my first convention. I had a year and a half clean in Tampa, Florida. And this big hairy biker from Kentucky come up and he hugged me and he kissed me on the lips. And I went, "No, I ain't going to take that." And I kissed him right back. You know. He didn't stimulate me sexually, but I got his phone number. Today I know men do hug, and we do touch, and we do feel. And something I want to jump back to, the fourth step. I read a lot of children's books now. I'm 41 years old, and I can finally read children's books and understand what the hell they mean. You know? One of my favorite ones is The Velveteen Rabbit. You know, about that little bitty rabbit. This rabbit finally becomes real when his child takes it to bed every night and loves it. You know, loves it, and it becomes real. And that's what happens to us here. We finally become real when we get in here and we love each other. A lot of people say they're real happy to be here. Well, I'm happy I can be real here. You know, finally got a place I can be real. You know, and it's okay. Another one I read to grown men, it's a little child's book that says, "There's a monster in my closet." And so a little bitty kid about 4 years old, and he goes to bed every night with a Davy Crockett coonskin cap with a raccoon tail and a little old pop gun. And he knows there's a monster in that closet, like we all got monsters in our fourth step, right? And he doesn't know what to do about this damn monster in the closet. And he finally figures out what to do. And he jumps up out of bed one night with that pop gun, and he eases around. Sure enough, there's this big purple-headed monster there, and he got big old warts and scars, you know, and shooting in the neck or what, I don't know. Man, take that back. But he knows that, he sees that monster, and he finally knows what to do, and he puts that pop gun on that monster, and he makes that monster get in bed with it. And the monster becomes his friend. When I tell you my secrets, they wither in the sunlight. I no longer have anything to be afraid of. Because your life is basically just like mine. When I share, a lot of women coming up after I share, and they tell me about their incest issues and things like that, all those secrets in their closet, I gently try to steer them back to their sponsor. I said, you can tell me, you can tell her. A lot of the men will come up and share about being sodomized in jail and doing all these other things and being beaten as a child. The way I see women make it in special cities around the United States like Columbus, Ohio, and Nashville and Atlanta is by sticking with the women. You know, women make it with the women. And the men make it with the men, you know. We're going to find a temporary fix in each other's doors, but it ain't going to last long. About 5 years ago, I was down in West Palm Beach, and I attended this retreat, and my relationship was on the rocks. Things weren't going good, and I was going down there so many notches I can put on my gun, old gunslinger, right? I went down there, and this woman's sharing this midnight meeting about 6'2", blonde, beautiful woman from Kentucky sharing. Every time a man tells me I'm beautiful, I feel like I ought to go to bed with him. And something popped up here for the first time. I said, they got feelings. They're real. Now, that night you became my sisters. I haven't found it necessary to use a woman like a drug since I've been clean. And I've never gone to bed with a woman that had less than a year clean. I won't do that. I will not compromise that principle. I make it sound like I'm a great lover or something. I've only been to bed with three women since I've been clean in 6.5 years. And that's all I need. That's all it takes. I go to bed with myself every night, and I can do that. I can sleep with a clean conscience. Where was I? You remember? Seventh step. From the willingness in the sixth step, I found some humility in the seventh step, realizing I can't remove my shortcomings, which are really just acting out of my defects of character. Lust was my biggest one, so I'll share about lust. At Bloomsburg, it was right up here last night, at Bloomsburg East Coast Convention about 4 years ago, first time I was actually asking God to help me with my lust. My God's got a sense of humor. He put three beautiful women in my room, and there's only three beds. I mean, one of them had to sleep with me every night, and I'm working on lust. And I'm trying to be faithful to my girlfriend back home. About 5 o'clock in the morning, I could stand it no more the first night. We got up and sat on the side of the bed and took off all our clothes, and we started sharing from the gut and from the heart about why am I afraid of you and why are you afraid of me. And those women are some of the best friends I have in the world today. And they jump over the counter or whatever I'm at a convention to hug my neck and tell me how much they love me. Humility. When I had to leave my first sponsor left town, I had to find another sponsor. This is 6 years ago, some time ago. And I had to find another sponsor, and I was on the eighth step with my first sponsor. And I went around, and I prayed about it, and I asked about it, and I wrote about it, and I found another sponsor. My sponsor, the guy asked to be my sponsor, said, well, you got to go back to the first step. I said, well, wait a minute, you don't know who I am. I started these six meetings here, and these three prison meetings here, and we got a fellowship of 93 people coming to meetings now because of, and I said, wait a minute, it ain't because of me, and I didn't do. I used to shoot dope in the bathroom at the AA meetings, and I was sober. And I finally asked these people for help, and they lovingly did the best thing they could do. They steered me to these other people they called deranged that started another meeting called Narcotics Anonymous. And there was five people, and they asked me to leave. And that's the most loving thing they could do. And I realized I was violating their traditions by being there, you know, because I'm an addict. You know, it ain't the substance. And it works. This program works. Humility in the eighth step, integrity in the ninth step, humility in the seventh step. In the eighth step, I found some brotherly love. I made a list of all the people I had harmed from the fourth step. The people I had harmed the most were my immediate family members. My mom was dying of cancer about 4 years ago. And I was trying to make the best amends I could to her. And I didn't have any money back then. I still don't have any now. But I told her my story. And for 8 years, they disowned me. And they read about me in the paper once in a while. They never call, you know. And they disowned me. And before my mom died, I got everybody in my family to say goodbye to her. Because I heard you people sharing how important it was for that loved one you lost in a war or in a car wreck. And you didn't get that chance to say goodbye. So I got everybody in my family to say goodbye to her. And there was nothing left of her at the end. She weighed 72 pounds. You could have picked her up with one hand. I went in the room. I left Friday to go to the first New England Regional Convention in Boston. And I went in there. And I didn't know if I had said goodbye to her or not. So I made a point to say goodbye to her. I said, Mom, I'm probably most at peace when I'm fishing. And when I'm fishing, I'll talk to you. She said, yeah, I know. I'm dying. There ain't much left. She said, I've seen your life change in the last 3 years, you know. You came in this program called Narcotics Anonymous, and when I got into NA, I called them up from Columbus. They were in Columbus, Georgia, and I was in Gainesville. I called them up long distance. I said, Mom, and my dad was on the other phone. I said, I'm going to try this thing called NA. She said, thank God you're dying, Billy. And my dad said, hey, you ain't going to make it. You know, only 5% of you intravenous users ever recover, and he hung up the phone. Now, in that first year, I hung on a spike. You know, sometimes I'm going to show that old fart. I can, you know, when it got real bad, I just hung on. I remember his face. After a year clean, my father's a short man, 5'9", weighs 325 pounds, is a retired colonel in the Army. After that first year clean, he hugged me and he told me he loved me, and we were like two rhinos groveling out in his front yard. You know, I love you, I love you. And I saw that old man cry. It's the first time I ever saw him cry. And most of you guys are just like me. You wanted your father's love all your life, and you never heard him say, I love you. And that really meant something to me. It's one of the steps. I see you crying, brother, and I love you. You know, it's okay for us tough guys to cry, too. It washes the windows to our soul and lets people in, you know, where we live. When my mom was dying, I said goodbye to her, and she said, yeah, you know, when you come by here on the way to conventions, you usually got some straggly-looking people with you, and they look just like you when you came to NA. They're kind of black and blue and stink. And what I do every time I walk into their house, I say, well, here's where the liquor is, this is where the silver is, this is where the jewelry is, this is where the checkbook is. If you want to beat them, do it now. We'll save a couple days' time. And she said, every time you leave the house, the jewelry's still there, the liquor's still there, the money's still there, and the checkbook's still there. You ain't beat us for nothing. And you've gained a little bit of weight, too. I hugged her, and I told her I loved her, and I said goodbye. And when I got up to Boston on Wednesday, she had died on the way up there, and I found out on Thursday. And there's 1,100 recovering addicts at that first New England Regional Convention. And I wasn't going to share it with anybody. I was going to be a tough guy. And finally, they asked me to come to the last special interest meeting I went to was a men's meeting on Saturday morning with 350, 400 of these tough asses, hard ass guys from New York and Philadelphia and Boston, you know, these hard asses. And they asked me to share, and I shared that week. My 14-year-old daughter, who was living with me, had gone out and gotten wasted. And the next morning, all I could do was rub her head with a wash rag while she's puking in that toilet the whole day. And tell her how much I loved her and not yell and scream at her like my folks used to do to me and your folks used to do to you. And tell her, you know, it'll be different. It'll be a different toilet. It'll be a different town. But it's the same thing 20 years down the road because I've been there, Kate. And you don't have to do this. I can't take away your pain. I can tell you how much I love you. And that week my relationship was on the rocks, and I shared that week my mother had died, and I wasn't going to let you people in my life and let you know. And I was crying up at the podium, and the guy that was doing the sign was down here, and he was crying, and he'd stopped, and he turned around. He was the only one I could see. And I know that whatever's going on in my life, you know, I can share it at a meeting. If it's painful, I can share my pain. I divide my sorrow. You know, if it's happy, I can multiply the smiles in my life. And when I looked up, all these hard asses from New York and Boston and Philadelphia were crying, too. And they gave me a standing applause and told me to keep coming back. It works if you work it. You know, we go through tragedies in our life. You know, we go through all sorts of things we don't have to pick up. We can go to our home group. We can go to another addict and share it with them, and it's the burden's lifted. Now, there's something we read at every meeting that says the therapeutic value of one addict helping others without parallel. We're the professional addicts. The amateurs are still out there. We know how this shit works. We know how to stay clean. Another amendment I got a chance to make was, in 67, before I went in the Army, I was flipping hamburgers for a guy in Columbia, South Carolina. He was paying me 95 cents an hour, and I didn't figure it was enough money. So I stick $2 in the till, and I stick a dollar in my pocket. And this old man was giving me room and board for 40 bucks a month, and I'm ripping him off. He'll charge me room and board 40 bucks a month. And I got a chance about 3 years ago to go down there and make amends to him. And I just come in from a convention, and I'm in the back room. And he's living with his son, who I went to high school with, I went to Vietnam with, and the old man can't hear. He's hard of hearing. I'm back there trying to make these amends. Every time I go make amends, my little asshole puckers up, you know, and I go and I say a prayer and I do what I'm supposed to do. And they never come out like I think they're going to come out. I go in there to make these amends. I said, and he can't hear. I'm yelling. And I said, Deke, you know, back in 67, I used to flip hamburgers for you, and I beat you out of a few dollars. And I'm reeling off these 20s, you know, and I'm putting them on the coffee table. He said, you know, you was a good old boy until you started using them drugs. He looked down at the coffee table and said, and that ain't all the money either, brother. I would have shit my pants if he said, keep coming back. It works if you're working. Now, my first couple meetings, I wanted what you people had. And relapse isn't a requirement. I've got one white chip. That's all it took. I never went to a treatment center. You know? If I can make it, anybody can make it, believe me. You know? I went to my first couple meetings, and you people shared it just for today. You don't have to use anymore. I said, okay, I'll try that. So I come back a week later. Just for today, I didn't use. Now what do I do? And at the end of the meeting, they said, just for today, you don't have to pick up anymore. I said, bullshit. They tell me if I don't use and I don't pick up, it's going to get better. But I kept coming back. You know, you'd share at meetings. Finally, after my sponsor made me listen, you'd share at meetings. I'd sit there and I'd cross my legs and I'd have to pee and I wouldn't go pee because I was afraid I was going to miss something and save my ass. And you'd say something about cocaine, I'd have to go shit right away. In the ninth step, I got some integrity back, you know, based on a life of desperation, the honesty in the first step, the hope, the faith, the discipline, the courage, the willingness, the humility, the brotherly love, the integrity in the ninth step. Another amendment I'd like to share is, last summer I got to make amends to my 9-year-old daughter, Bridget. It was on the front porch of a friend of mine's house in Atlanta. I asked her to come sit with me in this big rocking chair. And I just held her for a while, and I hugged her, and I told her how much I loved her, and I couldn't make up for those 7 years when I just left them. All I did was pay the bills, but I just wasn't there. I used to beat myself up as a parent, saying probably my biggest failing is as a father. And when I get my kids every summer, I get them for a month, and they bring out the little child in here. You know, and we have fun. And we usually have a thing we call taking a nap in the afternoon. And we're all yawning, I'm going to take a nap, and we're all out, or we're sleeping, we're going to go take a nap. And we get in there in that bed, and none of us take a nap. We tickle, and we hug, and we play, and we end up reading children's books to each other. And we have fun. Something that helped me realize there is a child inside of here happened at the NA convention about some time back. Some special friends of mine from Columbus, Ohio. There were 12 of us sitting in this room, and 6 of us sat in chairs, and we meditated. And we listened to this music, meditational music. And the 6 people stood around behind them, and they massaged the 6 people that were sitting there. And before they would move to the next person, they would not let go of you. That means there was somebody always massaging you and touching you. And we centered on something when it was fun as a child. And I had this little grade school picture of me with a pink and white bow tie, my hair sticking up. I was in St. Agnes Catholic School in Leavenworth, Kansas or something. And my best friend was a dog named Kim. And I could beat that dog and kick that dog. All I do was feed that dog, and that dog loved me to death. And that dog and I would escape. Yeah. And I pictured this beautiful grassy hillside where she and I would go fishing. And that's where I was most at peace when I was growing up. And the people behind you, when they were massaging you, would lean over and tell you things they always wanted to hear as a child and never heard. And one woman leaned over and said, "We'll never leave you." And I cracked. I said, "Oh." And there was a meeting after that meeting where this woman had lost her mother and father in a car wreck when she was a child. You know, and most of us feel the abandonment, you know, and then we isolate and we have all that loneliness. Big part of our lives is loneliness. Man, when the newcomers talk about loneliness, we can all relate. You know, when you come up here to your first couple meetings and you share what's going on in your life, you know, we can all relate. We remember our first meeting. We always remember that first meeting. And I never want to forget. Based on that integrity, I got in the 10 steps. You know, I know I'm an apprentice human being learning how to do it right with your help today. I found some perseverance in the 10 step. I keep trying to do it every night, trying to see where I could do things different. You know, how could I have avoided that or done this different? And my life's pretty good today. It's better than it's ever been. It really is. I drive all over the country seeking recovery, chasing this program. I ride in a Toyota truck that's got 249,000 miles on it, you know. And I'm going to make one of these Toyota commercials one day if I can ever learn how to click my heels up in the air. But it's working. And the 11th step, the principle behind the 11th step for me is power. And I find all my power through prayer and meditation. And you people had to teach me how to pray all over again and how to meditate. I live with two men who are recovering addicts, one who was in an institution for like 7 years. And we took a meeting into this institution, and he was the only guy in there I saw had a spark. And he asked me for suggestions on how you staying clean, man. So we gave him this black and white book, It Works. You know, one, I think it's the second edition of our six editions of It Works, How and Why. And we gave him this book, and he started reading, and his ass caught on fire. You know what I mean? And he's got a year and a half clean. He's been out since December, and he's living at my house. And he's one of the most beautiful human beings I've ever met. And H&I works. And I'm going to talk about that in the 12th step, but I just want to share that for a minute. Prayer, oh, I know I shared that. Prayer and meditation. The three of us, when I'm home, we sit on the front porch of my house, double-wide trailer, and overlook this beautiful botanical lake. And we meditate, and we try to be still and be quiet and listen. And it's neat to see three grown men get excited about sunsets and about eagles and about hawks and about fish, you know, things we never even saw while we were using, you know. And we can identify five different kind of woodpeckers now, you know, besides woody woodpeckers. And the little things in life are real exciting today. From that meditation, the prayer, the power in my life comes from that. And I guess the 12th step, which is service. Service is synonymous with love to me. You know, we keep what we have by giving it away. What was so freely given to us, we give it to somebody else. And it's like a huge pyramid. It just keeps growing and growing. This year we're going to have a world convention in Florida. And they're going to have probably 8,000 to 10,000 recovering addicts down there. And if you have a chance, please come on down. You can stay at Ken's house. I can sit in a world convention in the lobby for 5 days and just hug people and have a wonderful time. You know, I don't get to see you people enough. You know, you mean that much to me. Synonymous with love. There's a lot of exciting things going on in NA today. One of them I'd like to touch on, the way we give it away is through our subcommittees, through H&I, through PI, through literature. And a lot of things are going on in literature today, and we're just about on the verge of having our own meditational book, you know, NA, written by addicts, for addicts. They still need some input from you people, you know, if you'd like to share something about what you like to meditate on a particular day, please write it down, give it to your literature subcommittee chairperson, or send it to the World Service. You know, they'll listen. They're trusted servants, not serpents. And they will listen. Love. H&I. I love to go to prisons and share. You know, they're my kind of folk. I was in Columbus, Ohio a couple weeks ago, and I was looking around at this meeting called the Grateful Not Deadheads. It's a meeting on Tuesday night in Columbus, Ohio. And I saw a guy that I'd shared with in prison for 2 straight years, and he was at that meeting. And he's a week away from 3 years clean. I just jumped over the table and ran over and hugged him and told him I loved him. And he started crying. I started crying. When I go into prison meetings and share, I'll stand by the front door, and I won't let a guy get out of there without hugging him. You know, some of them will back up and say, hey, I ain't going to kiss you, man. I ain't going to kiss you. I'm just going to hug you. No. We grew up without hugs in our lives. We grew up whenever a man touched us, we were going to get robbed or beaten. You know, we don't have to be beaten anymore. A couple of years ago, they asked me to share in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And I'd written a song called Just for Today. And my children were with me back then. She's plugging her ears. My children were with me back then, and it was outside, and they were doing what kids do. They were playing and running around, and I sang at the end, and they weren't there to hear it. And the next week, they asked me to share in Lebanon, Pennsylvania, and the guy that chaired that meeting is here this morning. And when I got through, I sat down, and I was finished. And my daughter Bridget came over and said, Dad, are you going to sing tonight? I said, no, I'm already through. And the people in the room said, oh, yeah, Mr. Bill, sing, sing. So I sang this song, and when I got through, my daughter came over and said, Daddy, don't sing no more. My honesty committee. And I may not be what I could be, and I may not be what I should be, but thanks to you people, I ain't what I used to be. I'm going to ask some more people to stand. Now, I don't do this to embarrass you just because I want to give you a hug or people around you need to give you a hug. Who's in their first 30 days of being clean? Please stand up. Please hug them. Please somebody hug them. Oh, man. That's cute. And we're genuinely glad you're here. Please keep coming back. You deserve this way of life. This has been a beautiful convention. Seems like every East Coast convention you go to, you got to walk a while. Then after the first day, you realize where you can park your car. And then the third day, we all get towed away. It'll be different this time. If you're in your first 30 days or your first 20 years, no matter what goes on in your life, you don't have to pick up anymore. I think you know that by now. What I heard in my first few meetings was just for today. You don't have to use anymore. I wrote this little song called Just for Today, and somebody in here prayed for tolerance and patience this morning, so you're going to get a double barrel full of it. Just for today. Just for today, I ain't got to use. Just for today, I know how to choose. I made up my mind to leave the other life behind. Just for today, I think I'll try anyway. Thank you. I love you.